to IdeaGen TV. Today, I'm thrilled to have with us Jane Oates, president of Working Nation. Jane, welcome.
Thank you, George. Always great to be with you.
You know, Jane, it is a very exciting moment always to have you on IdeaGen TV, especially to hear from you on all of the work that's happening. We never have enough time. All of the work that's happening at Working Nation. And I'd like to begin by asking you, for our global audience, to describe the state of the American workforce today.
Well, I think the American workforce continues to be a leader in the world. I mean, it's so amazing how agile they are, how so many of them have adapted to job titles that didn't exist when they entered the workforce, and quite frankly, how they have really weathered the COVID situation, when our workforce was completely shut down except for essential workers, how they've come back and really rebuilt the economy in a very interesting way. I've said to you before, George, I think 2022 was the year of the American worker, where they got voice and they made decisions that were really important about work-life balance, and where they really began to say what was important to them in terms of the work environment. Not only the money's always important, and benefits and flexibility, but also they were looking for purpose, making sure that they were finding employment that gave their life meaning, that gave them a sense of satisfaction. So that's how I felt in 2022. And I think 2023 has really continued that trend. Workers are continuing not only, you know, to voice their preferences in terms of employers and job like perks, maybe you would call them, but I would call them benefits. And they've continued to be incredibly productive in the workforce.
Incredible to hear and completely agree. And so in your opinion, with respect to the American workforce, what are you seeing as the biggest strengths and or weaknesses at this moment?
So as I said, the resilience, the agility of the American worker, you know, you take, for instance, someone who pre-COVID was working in the leisure and hospitality industry, you know, that industry still has not come back in terms of numbers of jobs to its pre-COVID level. So we're still down 750,000 jobs in that sector. Those workers figured out how they could do other things, how they could identify their skills from the jobs they lost and then transfer them to a sector that was building, adding jobs. So that resilience and agility still is the thing that amazes me every day about the American worker. In terms of challenges, I still think we have, as a country, a gigantic challenge when it comes to digital literacy. How do we not only do it better in our K-12 schools and in higher education, but how do we incorporate digital learning styles and digital learning skills for adults who are already in the workforce? Because we know with the pace of change in technology, the implementations of technology, the new software developments that are happening every day, that you cannot thrive in this economy without those digital skills.
And so how are we seeing the work accelerate again post-pandemic?
Well, it's been amazing, right? I mean, we got all the people back to work, all the job numbers. I shouldn't say people because it may not be exactly the same people. But when you think about the fact that 4.5 million jobs were created in 2022, It's pretty awesome, right? I mean, it's awe-inspiring. And then you look at the first 3 months of 2023 with over a million jobs created already. It looks like we're on track to create another 4 million this year. I don't want to negate it and do any bad experiences here. Maybe it'll slow down, but it's pretty incredible, George. I mean, the economy has continued to grow at such a robust pace, And the reason I'm optimistic that 2023 and 2024 will be similar is because all the new development that's being done, you know, for instance, in the chip industry, you know, the fact that we're going to have three major new plants in upstate New York, in Phoenix, in Ohio, those are going to create thousands of really good jobs. And then when those good jobs, as with all manufacturing jobs, you know, manufacturing, unlike other sectors, creates other jobs because people go to lunch around the factory. People do their dry cleaning around the factory. You're constantly creating new jobs without even considering all the subcontractors to that main contractor. So the fact that there will be widgets and different pieces that are made that are needed in chip production that will be produced in adjacent facilities that aren't even counted yet. So I'm very optimistic.
Well, your optimism is contagious, Jane. And, you know, we've had several conversations on IdeaGen TV throughout the past several years. And what I've seen is so incredibly inspiring, and I know our global audience is also incredibly inspired by it, is that optimism and the reality. So the optimism combined with the realistic situation we're in, and 4.5 million jobs created in 2022 and potentially 4 million this year, 2023, sounds profound to me. And so how can we look for this accelerated progress in terms of workforce development? How can we continue that?
So what we've got to do is convince people that are sitting on the sidelines right now that there is a place for them in this new thriving economy. We need to get that labor market participation rate up. And that means, you know, when I talk about labor market participation rate, you know, right now it's hovering around 63% and not moving very quickly. And remember, that only covers people that are prime age, 25 to 55. Not considering people over 55. So we really need to, so if that prime age is not coming back at the level we want them to, we have to put extra effort, of course, into them. But we also have to look at younger workers, and we have to look at people over that 55 mark, really looking at older workers who can stay in the workforce longer, who can do the kinds of jobs that are being developed, who can learn the new skills that are required in these jobs. So I really think the fact that we're trying to do all of that right now, there's such interesting things going on in trying to incent young people to have easier entrance into good jobs. There's such effort, I think, and I hope it continues, into looking at older workers who may have skills that they learned in their years of working that aren't the same as an academic degree, but certainly are as valuable on the workplace. These people that have learned on the job may know more about the application of knowledge than somebody who just studied things from a textbook. So I think we're getting better on recognizing all of that.
And so as we're looking at these, the communities and the individuals, how can these individuals and communities contribute to accelerating progress in workforce development? And then most importantly, how does then Working Nation engage with them?
Well, first of all, we want them to come back. You know, that's how they can engage. And sometimes that means returning to a traditional school. More often it means taking, you know, a course that leads to an industry recognized credential. And that's a quicker path and sometimes a more direct path to a very discrete job. So I can figure out how to become, you know, a welder much more easily than I can figure out what I'm going to do necessarily with a wonderful liberal arts degree, right? That path is and both are equally important. But too often we have said only the academic degree. And quite frankly, the majority of our country doesn't have an associate's degree or a baccalaureate. So we need to really look at the skills that you can get from a shorter term credential with the opportunity to stack that if you'd like to at a later date toward getting a degree. I never want to say don't get a degree if you have that opportunity. So Working Nation, quite simply, you know, as a nonprofit media entity, tells those stories. Tells the stories of the individual, you know, through journalism, through video, through podcast, but also tells the story of the entity that's doing the training, sometimes an academic institution, sometimes a nonprofit, and also tells the story of the employer who's looking so hard for talent right now, trying to figure out how they get enough people with the right skills so they can build their own workforce within their company, in manufacturing so they can add a second or third shift, in healthcare so that they can act accurately and empathetically take care of the people that are looking for care, in education, you know, so that they have enough teachers to do what they need to do, both in K-12 and career and technical education and beyond.
You know, given the just incredibly rapidly changing nature of the workforce, ChatGPT being one example, I mean, AI, the changing nature of work is something that a lot of folks are looking at, and I know you're looking at. And so how do you begin at Working Nation to prioritize specific areas within workforce and workforce development? How does that even begin when there are so many factors coming at us?
Well, and you know our founder, Art Bilger. George, you've met Art several times. I think when he started, his purpose was to educate and inform the American public about what the jobs of the future are really going to be, and what the skills that you need to really compete for those jobs. As we've evolved over the last 6 years, and so I wasn't there in the very beginning. I joined 6 years ago. But as we've evolved, I think we've recognized that we also need to motivate people. So we need to motivate individuals that they have the ability to go out and take whatever courses or credentialing they need to take to qualify for these new jobs. I mean, yes, we still need to inform them. As you said, ChatGPT, you know, what are the jobs in AI? What are the jobs in cloud? What are the jobs in data analytics? All these terms didn't exist when they were entering the workforce. And quite frankly, in many school districts, even today, they're not adequately discussed so that students know what they should be looking at. But I think we also feel that we have to motivate. We have to tell the stories of effective colleges, mostly community colleges, but 4 years as well, effective colleges, and how are they delivering the education, you know, both in terms of time. Does something really need to take a year, or could it be compressed in a more kind of hands-on way where you're building the academic knowledge in with the applied knowledge, so someone's ready to hit the ground running, where they're job ready day one. In a four-year college, you know, for instance, are these colleges really doing work-based learning? You know, we hear lots about the platinum standard in work-based learning, registered apprenticeships, but the reality is paid internships, work projects, all those things are things that a student can put on their resume that give them a leg up for these job openings that say, you know, bachelor's degree required and 1 to 3 years experience. Well, you can't graduate from college with experience unless you've had work-based learning. You know, so that has to be incorporated, in my opinion, at every 2 and 4 year institution. And finally, George, you know, I'm talking about motivating people. I talked about the individual, the job seeker. I talked about the nonprofits, whether educational or someone who's not an academic institution that's doing training, showing them best practices and, quite frankly, things that they should leave by the wayside that are no longer skills required by in-demand jobs. But the last thing I would say to you is we need to motivate employers. You know, employers, all employers that need talent need to look both in the places that were successful sites for them in the past, but also to look at new talent pools that they may have avoided in the past. So, you know, I talked about older workers, but I feel strongly also about, you know, the gender segregation that goes on, the occupational segregation, where in manufacturing you looked for men, and in nursing, you looked for women. You know, everybody should expand their focus. They shouldn't let gender or race or age, or in my opinion, either disability status. You know, there are people out there with physical disabilities and people that are on the spectrum that are really able to do the job well. that people haven't looked at in the past. The same thing with people who have a blip in their record. You know, for so many years, we had a box that said, do you have, you know, have you been incarcerated? Have you been adjudicated in terms of youth? That's ridiculous. And more places are getting rid of that box. But the reality is that it's still a stigma. When someone has served their time, it's still a stigma. They should be invited back to the workplace, especially those that have high skills, you know, and those that don't should be invited back and be given those skills as they're working. There is still nothing wrong with on-the-job training.
You know what, Jane, this is why it's such an inspiring interview always with you, because you're providing such candid, such powerful insights into what's happening in workforce development and the workforce in general. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about what everyone's experiencing, which is the remote work, work-life balance. Where is all this going? What is that ultimate balance? Where will we land? Do you have a crystal ball? I mean, things are, you know, we're post-COVID. What does it look like and what trends are you seeing?
So look, I think we're always going to be looking for more flexibility as workers. The unfortunate thing about flexibility and remote work particularly is that all jobs can't be done remotely. You know, when you go to the hospital, you don't want a remote nurse or a remote doctor. You don't want a remote teacher. So we've got to figure out a balance that gives flexibility, the options of flexibility to all workers, and figure out how to do that. But I do think that, you know, workers who have the ability to work remotely are demanding that. And while we've seen a lessening of the number of workers who are actually working full time remotely, for instance, you know, the federal government hasn't even been called back yet. I think that will happen in the next few months. And, you know, in some sectors where people have been remote, there are lots of things to be worked out, George. You know, if you're working for a DC-based agency in the federal government, but you've decided to move to West Virginia and work remotely, you know, what happens when you have to be in the office? Who pays for that? What happens, you know, do you still get in a place like DC where the cost of living is higher than in many places in West Virginia? Do you still get the DC differential? These are all things that we can see very clearly that have to be worked out at the federal government level. The same thing is happening in the private sector. You know, if you've decided to work remotely and that's your choice, are these companies going to say, wait a minute, you're not going to get this paid the same as if you were in New York City every day, or if you were in Los Angeles every day, or Chicago? So I think those are all things that are going to settle in 2023. I don't know that we'll ever go back to every worker who has the ability to work remotely working 5 days a week in an office. But because you asked, I'm going to give you my opinion, George. And, you know, I worry about total remote work for certain people. So when you and I worked on the Hill, you know, we had interns left and right, and we got to see those interns, not only where they went to school or what their GPA was or how smart they were, but we got to see how they worked in a problem-solving situation. We got to see their people skills every day. And both you and I'm sure, I mean, we haven't talked about this, but had interns at one time or another where we said, hey, you did all the grunt work, all the background material for this. Why don't you come to this meeting with the senator, with me, and you do part of the presentation? I mean, that's something that's not given to every intern. And I have to tell you, I don't think I would have ever, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I would have ever had the comfort to take someone who I hadn't worked arm by arm with in a close office. I don't think I would have invited a remote worker to present to a senator, to my senator. So I think there's, and I've talked to people in the private sector about this, and many of them feel the same way, not only about interns, which was the example that I gave, but young associates who really showed grit and determination and insight and problem-solving skills that you wouldn't have been able to see so clearly in a document that they wrote, but instead you witnessed it as they were processing their assignment, and therefore those people moved up. And in many cases, yours and mine included, we mentored many of those people and we sponsored them. When they went to get a job somewhere else, we wrote them a recommendation. If they stayed within our organization, we took them, as I said, to those meetings with us. So I'm worried about what happens with that, because I think that mentorship, that sponsorship, I haven't seen it happening with remote workers. Doesn't mean it's not going to. It doesn't mean it's not happening in some places. And that might be a good discussion point, George, as people are watching this, that they can comment to you, oh, it is happening. We've systematized it in our company. That would be really good follow-up, because it's something that I really worry about. You know, yes, we want work-life balance. Yes, we want, you know, people to be able to thrive in their job. And we know all the things that are keeping people back from working, like childcare, you know, but you can't say you're working remotely to watch your children, because that feeds into that myth that you're really not working, you're watching your children.
Gosh, it's such a complicated, I mean, it's liberating that you're now able to work remotely for certain jobs, of course. But I think if you look at to your point, completely agree with everything you said. If you're not able to learn on the job, to have the subtle cues and the sidebars that wouldn't take place on a Zoom meeting, you can't have a sidebar on a Zoom meeting. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
And to say, no, next time maybe you want to consider doing something this way, or here's what I would do, or whatever bits of advice that cumulatively help enhance someone's career trajectory, right? Those lessons
learned.
That's
right. Exactly right.
That's the part that I'm also concerned about. There are certain jobs where you have to show up. There are certain jobs that can be completely remote, but there needs to be that. There's a recognition now in work-life balance, of course. But ironically, the talk now is, like you mentioned, is that folks aren't really disconnecting, because if you're working remotely, now there's an expectation that you can work anytime.
That's right.
And you're finding yourself working during dinner or during weekends or, you know, at the baseball game or, you know, whatever it may be. So it cuts both ways, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's not a 40-hour week now. It might be a 60-hour week and you didn't even realize it.
So it's right.
Complicated. It's complicated.
That's right. There's no respect for boundaries. You know, there was a day when people wouldn't call you on a weekend, or a day when people wouldn't call you after six. And since so many businesses are in many time zones, it becomes more and more complicated.
That's right. And so at Working Nation, you're measuring. How do you begin to measure the success of your efforts?
So, you know, George, we're, as I said, a nonprofit media company, as you know well. So first we look at viewership. When we write a story, when we do a video, when we do a podcast, we're always looking at the numbers. So audience is really a big part of our success metric. But we also look at impact. And we're redefining impact always, every day. We're learning from our funders. We're learning from the people we interview, the people that we video. What's the impact? So I'll give you one brief example. We're doing a project right now on the success of single mothers in attaining their two-year degree, their associate's degree. If we're serious as a country about a war on poverty, one great way to start it is making sure that when a young woman decides to have a child and ends up by herself, that we get her educated so that she can get a quality job. And, you know, one of the ways we're going to measure our success in this project will be how many other colleges either continue what they're doing and learn new things from the colleges that we've highlighted, how many colleges haven't thought about this population very specifically and start some targeted programs. And really, again, we'll look at numbers. Right now, it's an abysmal number for young mothers. Young is not the case. Single mothers of all ages finishing their degree right now is in the high single digits nationally within 6 years, a two-year degree within 6 years. So we're going to do a longitudinal look over time. Did these videos help motivate colleges to provide better services for these young moms? Or we'll also look at, did young mothers get some gumption and say, hey, I saw this video that says this particular college is offering this. Does this college offer it? And maybe they can push change as an individual or a group of individuals as well.
Jane, you know, that's an issue near dear to me. That's a very powerful insight. And thank you for all you're doing in that arena, because it's just important. Let's just say that.
Right.
And so as we conclude this interview, I'd like to ask, what is your call to action for our global audience? And the most important piece is, how can folks find out more about just the breadth and depth of the work that you're doing at Working Nation?
Well, thank you, George. I'll do the easy part first. Please look at our website, workingnation.org. Add your story. Our newsletter is free. You know, keep up to date with us and tell us your stories as well. But I think the call to action for the people watching this, number one, I'm going to repeat myself. If you have not gone back to work since COVID, for whatever reason, we need you back. Not only do we want you back, we need you. Your country needs you back to work, because we need everybody to really keep the kind of growth that we're seeing in our economy and to keep our businesses thriving. So I hope somebody watching this says, oh, you know, nobody ever asked me to come back. Consider yourself asked. We want you to come back to the workforce. The second thing, the call to action, George, is really about employers. You know, we didn't use the word today, but you know, some days I think my middle name is partnership. You're an employer and you are not actively partnering with an education or a training provider to help them figure out precisely the skills that you need, please take this opportunity to do that. You know, make sure that you figure out a way to work with your local community college, your local Goodwill, your local city year or year up, your local, figure out who's important. You know, if you're in a community that has Strive or has Prescolis, figure out how you partner with them. And finally, the same employers, because you are the secret sauce here. Employers are the ones that really keep our economy humming. If you are not looking in different places to find your talent, if you're not looking at an inclusive array of people who have talent, regardless of their background, regardless of their age, gender, race, ethnicity, please change that. Talk to your HR person, or in small and medium-sized businesses, you are the HR department. If you're looking in all of the same places, try something different.
Jane Oates, President, Working Nation. Leadership defined. You are my friend.
You are always my friend, George. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much for all you're doing to change the world. Jane, workingnation.org. Find out more. Changing the world. Thank you so very much.